Hello and welcome to another episode of Equity Merchants, where we speak to founders and investment professionals on everything startup investing in Africa. Today we are joined by Ahmed El-Motada, the managing partner and co-founder of 249 Startups. Prior to launching 249 Startups, El-Motada worked at telecommunications company MTN and fintech startups in Sudan. In this episode, he shares his motivation for starting Sudan's first equity fund and his hopes for the Sudanese tech ecosystem. All right, welcome, Ahmed. I hope I pronounced that well. Can you pronounce your last name?
Yes, it's Ahmed El-Motada.
El-Motada, okay. Oh, that's cool. All right, so like I was telling you earlier, you're like the first Sudanese VC or even founder that I'm actually speaking with. So it would be interesting to like get to know you. So share a little bit about yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
Now, first, thank you so much for hosting me. My name is Ahmed El-Motada. My background is in telecommunication. I graduated from the University of Khartoum in electrical and electronic engineering. I specialize in telecommunication and then in cybersecurity. I worked for MTN as well as some fintech company as well here in Khartoum, Sudan. This is the first hat. The second hat is I'm currently a managing partner and one of the co-founders of a company called 249 Startups. It's an accelerator company that work in Sudan in entrepreneurship. We provide an upskill entrepreneurs as well as investing in them. So we launched Sudan first ever equity investment fund in startups, and we call it Rhino Impact Investment Fund. It's indeed a fund that invests in equity in startups while at the same time trying to get impact driven companies into that through creating employment and jobs in Sudan and in the region. Thank you.
Okay, so you mentioned you worked at MTN and a few other fintech startups, and I was going through your LinkedIn profile in preparation for the interview, and I realized that you've spent most of your time working in Sudan, if not all, right?
Yes. Most of all of my employment type of is in Sudan.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the Sudan and the Sudanese tech ecosystem. How would you describe the Sudanese tech ecosystem right now?
Yes. Just a bit background about Sudan, so anyone would be able to understand how Sudan is. We are talking about a country of 42 million populations, with nearly 6% of that population under 28 years old. So we're talking about a very big nation, youth nation, and at the same time with a relatively very good mobile penetration in the country. We're speaking about 32 to 37% mobile penetration. So technically there is between 12 million up to 16 million of almost daily active access to the internet, or at least to the digital world, if I can say. Now, talking about the tech ecosystem, you know, Sudan had been into sanctions for years, and the sanction got lifted a couple of years back. In a way, it hurting the growth of the digital economy in the country, because there was issues in doing financial transactions, bank transfers outside the country, or even accessing, you know, digital platforms like, you know, Google, Amazon. Like, you would just go to this website or some websites hosted on these servers and you just get blocked, you know, like you are not allowed to access this because you are accessing from an IP address from Sudan. But at the same time, it created a new market where there is no much of a tech competition. You know, you wouldn't find Uber or these Airbnbs or these big giants startups operating in Sudan. This itself created a big market for Sudanese tech startups to innovate, to build, and then they scale their companies from there. The ecosystem in general is very, very new, very emerging, if you could say. There is a very few number of, if you could call them a big startups that are really had this number of funding rounds. Yet at the same time, there is a huge demand and a huge need for businesses across every sector, you name it, healthcare, education, fintech, agri-tech, or renewable energies. You know, like the country is full of opportunities, full of problems, and at the same time would give a new chances for people to get into. Maybe to conclude with this, the first intro on this, maybe our very top companies or startups operating in Sudan, it could be, there is a ride-hailing business, an Uber-like business, it's called Terhal. It could be the most advanced startup in Sudan. They have been there for 5 years now, and they run on to 80,000 drivers and above 3 million app downloads. And so these are technically the biggest startups and fastest growing one in Sudan. The biggest recent round of investment to any tech startup in Sudan post lifting of the sanctions was for an e-commerce website, a marketplace called alsouq.com, that was recently in late last year closed a round of a $5 million by Fauri from Egypt, as well as other Western venture capitals. This was the largest investment coming outside of Sudan to a tech Sudanese startups. It's led by a female entrepreneur. Her name is Nina Nsai.
Okay. So that's interesting because we wrote an article about Alsouq last year when it got the investment, and it was, I think that was my first introduction to the Sudanese ecosystem, because up to that point I didn't have any idea that anything happened in Sudan, especially in relation to tech. So it's interesting to know that there has been a lot going on since then. So let's talk about 249 Startups. But before we talk about what you do and what you've done since launching, I'm curious, how did you come about the name 249 Startups?
Yeah, no, indeed. So the 249 is the country code for Sudan, right? So it's okay. Yeah, it's about, so our mission is to connect Sudanese entrepreneurs with the international community and reshaping economic communities in Sudan. So it's just like, if you would like to invest in Sudan, you call 249, right? So this is how the 249 comes. But it also shows an internal aspiration to put Sudan on the map in terms of identity of a local hub that is going out of Khartoum, Sudan, across all over the world, getting investment and helping these startups and entrepreneurs scale, getting investments, and then creating impact across the region. The startups term is, you know, it's inspired mainly was by two stuff. Number one is we wanted to focus on highly impact, highly driven companies, tech enabled and high growth companies. So startups world is important to feature that we are trying to focus on the innovative one, the riskier ones, but at the same time, if they succeeded, able to have larger impact. Also, a very familiar name maybe is 500 Startups as one of the aspirations, similar to YC and others. So the name was also to inspire to get a sense of where we would like to be into that. Yeah.
All right. So you've kind of shared what your investment thesis is at 249 Startups. Can you share what led to the founding? So you mentioned your co-founder and the managing partner. So who are your co-founders, and how did you guys decide, okay, 249 Startups is what you're going to do, and why?
Yeah, no, indeed. So 249 Startups had been launched in 2018 in April, right? However, myself and my other co-founders, and which are both Sudanese, the first one, his name is Mortaz, and the second, her name is Khansa. So we are three. We launched together 249 Startups in 2018. However, we have been working together in entrepreneurship development and promotion in Sudan since 2013. So it's nearly 8 to 9 years of working in Sudan. However, at that time we were working, doing these activation events like startup weekends, hackathons, and small programs, tech shows, and this type of networking events, trying to spread awareness about entrepreneurship. And at the same time, along with other team of volunteers and other people, building and creating summits for entrepreneurship in Sudan. Most of the biggest startups, we saw them at some point in their life, like Tirhal, the Souq, all these were, when they were growing, we saw them and we had them across our programs and the shows, the network events we used to have. We were, I think through this network, we were privileged enough to get a good sense of network across the world. So we went and we visited California and the Silicon Valley. We went to Singapore, Kenya, Johannesburg, Milano, Colombia, Dubai, Istanbul, and other countries. And we saw how entrepreneurship changed these communities, how innovation and technology were able to disrupt these markets, creating employment and improving people's lives. Coming back to Sudan and seeing a very high unemployment rate, seeing a very bad economy, while at the same time a country full of resources, talents, youth, and a lot of people operating in here. So we said it's the right time that we work in building a place able to get these talents, treat them in the right way, helping them with connection with the private sector, access to markets, and also educating them about business, investments, raising funds, and others. All this combined, what brought us to start 249 Startups in April in 2018, with a mission of helping these entrepreneurs scale, raising funding, and then creating employment in Sudan.
All right. So since 2018, how many startups have you invested in?
So we do different sort of programs. So we run incubation programs of a 6 month program where we take idea to very early stage entrepreneurs, apply to our programs. This is one sort of program. This programs has, we have two nature of programs. We have a program that focus fully on innovative driven business models, and this one called Orange Corners. We manage it with the Dutch government and some private sector companies in Sudan. We have another early stage incubation program that focus on SMEs, the small and medium enterprises, like the ones that need not necessary equity investments and risky capital. They need loans and they need access to banks and etc. And we do this with the European Union and the UNIDO. We implement these programs. And on a growth stage, we have an accelerator program, and we call it Rhino Acceleration Program. And in the Rhino, we invest in equity on behalf of angel investors that they are putting as well their money into that fund. Since then, our start in 2018, maybe we had above 120 businesses graduated from our programs. They collectively raised the follow-up equity investments of nearly $700,000, and they supported and created 1,000 jobs across that. All these traction of these companies shows that with a minimum investment, you are able to get effectively higher returns in a country like Sudan. Of course, there is obstacle and all, but there is from a time to time a startup or a company that you see a really very natural growth for them. This is where we come on a later stage to invest into these companies. The Rhino structure or the fund structure is it's currently $500,000 fund. that aim to reach $2-3 million fund to invest in the startups in Sudan. It's going to take seven startups each year to invest in them. Initial ticket sizes between $20,000 to $30,000, subject to more ticket sizes and follow-up investments by investors from our networks.
Okay, so you just I'm just trying to like form a question around what has happened in the last, let's say, 2 years. YC invested in the first African, the first Sudanese startup. That was last, I think that was sometime this year. So they invested in their first Sudanese startup. What do you think has been the biggest impact of YC's investment, or has it had any impact? Because in most parts of Africa, so I'll use Nigeria for example, YC has invested in at least some of the largest companies in Africa, and it has kind of, let's say, spawned more investment. So you have a lot of startups these days that they are actually looking at getting into YC. So do you think that YC's investment has had any effects on the Sudanese ecosystem?
Definitely. In an ecosystem like Sudan, where there is no opportunities Sudan doesn't have any VCs, if I can say, right? There is no that number of big investment rounds that happened in the startups. We just nearly out of almost 8 or 10 years of a growing ecosystem starting to grow, we just now started to see these deals last year, the year before, and this year. So it's very few. It's less than even a 6 or 7 that you could consider in a big investment into that. So there is always the issue of you will find the startups in Sudan have a traction of a seed round, Series A, while at the same time they didn't raise much money. It might just be a bootstrapping for family and friends. Okay. So any interventions or any company that would get into, the big people, like YC, 500 startups, Techstars, or other regional accelerator or funds, it's definitely going to have a positive impact on the country. Not necessarily the positive impact in terms of the company will take over the market, but it's a hope message. It's an inspiration that this is possible, and this is itself act as a validation at the end. Wherever YC enter, or 500 or Techstars, when they enter any market, it's act as a validation, because you get to see more investments coming. And this is when it happened. It wasn't only because of YC. Like a couple of months from announcing YC company, which is Bloom, we had Soup.com, and the Soup.com had this big investment round with contributions with Fauri and other investors. This is itself, it brought in the attention about the ecosystem in Sudan. Lots of newsletters, magazines, media channels started to write about Sudan. What's happening? Why? What is this investment that happened? And we started to appear on the news. That it's like a momentum, like it's a momentum that's being built. Like it's a deal happening here. It's a Terhal that's growing that much. It's a new YC coming here. Who knows? Maybe a couple of months we hear about another company join another big accelerator, and then we hear maybe 1 year or two exit. It's evolving. It's evolving, and definitely any positive point into that, it definitely add to the validation of the ecosystem in Sudan.
All right. Okay, so you mentioned that very little funding has come to Sudanese startups, and a lot of the time when founders or entrepreneurs don't get like the funding that they need, they are usually more creative about how they like go about their business. So they are trying to ensure that every money they're making money as soon as possible. I'm trying to ensure that any money we get is like used very well. So do you think that the fact that Sudanese startups haven't gotten so much funding, especially outside funding in the past. Do you think is that it has influenced the way Sudanese startup founders actually build?
Yeah, this is a big question. You see, in any ecosystem, and especially in a countries where there is high inflation rate, unstable economy, political situation, and others, like most of the countries in the Africa, and Sudan is definitely one of them. There is a high risk factor where investors would like to put their money. So everyone would like to see someone else did it before and got returns so that they will get some trust. Sudan is coming from the private sector in Sudan. It's coming from, traditional trading, family businesses type of economy, the biggest ones.
Yeah.
And traditionally, people used to this trading mindset, I give you $10,000, I take from you 30%, 35%, 40% equity in your company. Now, that mindset coming from trading, but also coming from a mindset of high risk, right? So when you talk about the startups, technology, when you talk about innovation, we are talking about the future, about potential growth that might happen. This is something that not everyone would put the money and then would ask for only 10 or 5% of the company. Now, coming to your question, it's definitely affected. I would say access to finance is one of the biggest obstacles for businesses in Sudan, specifically for startups. Because even the normal SME is able to at least access some finance from banks. But even that in Sudan is a challenge. Interest rate of the banks reach up to 30%, 36% a year. And this is crazy, it's very high percentage. And the equity is almost none. Most of the investments are angels, investment family, investment and friends, right? So it's that issue. So this problem, that's because it's causing that issue, this is one of the reasons that the survival rate of the startups in Sudan is very low. Because by the time they would like to raise their another capital, they will get an offer that wouldn't work with them. And then they wouldn't take it, and unfortunately they will die because they will run out of cash or run out of anything. And we might not be talking about, they are asking about lots of cash. Maybe a $5,000 would do a run out for runway for the company for five to six months. So this is a challenge. And for us at 249 Startups, when we pitch the opening a fund in Sudan, that's equity fund, the main statement is to try to bridge the pre-seed and seed stage gap in Sudan. And instead of these entrepreneurs to go and to lose much of their equity, we would give them a ticket sizes and we take more risk with them, with the investors we have on board, which are mainly Sudanese living in the diaspora and also here in Sudan. And we take from them a minor equity. We're talking about 5% of their companies. So this is how we are trying to contribute to that. Maybe lastly to add to this, the fund that we are doing, which is the Rhino Fund, that's equity, it's not our very fairest one, but it's the fairest one as equity. We also manage, as a fund managers, along with our financial institution partner, we manage a development fund or impact fund for one of our programs, and it's above a million euro across a couple of years. So this fund, it shows to us that investing early in startups is actually increasing their survival rate. So we were having some evidence base that says that investing and taking more risky capital to other innovative startups actually paying off in a year period. And this is why we introduced the Rhino Fund, trying to contribute to solving that issue, because all the communication we have with regional investors, like Launch Africa or even YC 500 and these regional investors, is saying that if we were able to get these entrepreneurs one step ahead, a small cash tickets, they would be able to generate good traction, build their legalities, their governance, and their chances of being accepted or raising further round would increase.
Okay, so coming from this So based off your response, Sudanese startups are operating in an environment where access to finance was, or that in an environment that was like, will I say, largely built on trade and commerce. And you've already confirmed that it affects the way startup founders build. I'm just wondering, you invest in the startups that go through your program, and you also have to raise money from other people. How has that been? What has been your experience raising money from the angel investors that that invest through 249 startups? So what has been your experience around that?
Yeah, well, of course, it's not easy because, in investments in a startup is not common in Sudan. So you wouldn't find lots of people, number one, able to, to have funding and able to contribute that funding and invest in the startups. Number two, not a lot of people have, even if they have money, they don't have the, a lot of them have the awareness of investing in startups, you know. Right. So the angel investments need lots of education into that. Mm. What we did is we tried to get ourselves associated with different networks like the APAN, the African Business Angel Network, and we created some sort of a Sudanese angel network group, trying to share experiences, talking about each other, and building that network. Then we would approach the investors that we have, which is basically, as a start, the Sudanese businessmen and women, people in executives in corporates, you know, wealthy people, family businesses, individuals, and pitching everything what we do, how our startups are growing. We provide insight. We host demo days where these come and meet the startups that graduate from our programs. They see them by their eyes. They get the chance to talk to them. They see their financial data, the business plans, and then bit by bit, this is creating a momentum and created some sort of trust. And some validation happened. We had one of our graduates raised above $100,000 in equity investment from a Sudanese living in the diaspora. So okay. so this validation, while showing that the entrepreneurs that come in out of our programs are to some extent validated, and it's actually worth to invest in them. And there is other people that they did. So building one a bit by a bit on this, we reached a point where we reach out to the network that of the investor that continuously supporting us, advising us, and also attending the demo days and etc. to take that risk. So the Rhino Fund we I talked about, for example, when we started it, the partner with us into that is it's an entity called Sudan Next Gen. It's mm-hmm. represented by a Sudanese living in the diaspora, specifically in the United States. So these are Sudanese American that they saw exposure and they have the risk to take, but not only in United States, but they also living in Europe, living in GCC, and also in Sudan. So this itself, building on all this work of the past 4 years, if I can say, is what allowed us to finally launch this concept of a fund this year in Sudan as the first equity fund to invest in startups. And I would say with more validation, more investments, more success stories, I think we'll be able to increase that. Our big vision is to use the current amount we raised to attract further investments, further funds from the region, institutions and others. So we would also go beyond Sudan, reach out to institutional investors, other entities across GCC or even in Africa, to see if they would be interested as well to invest with us into the Sudanese tech startups.
Okay. So when you look around Africa, a lot of the startups that raise money, or majority of them that raise money, are in one sector, fintech. And back here in Nigeria, it's very similar. Fintech startups raise almost, I think, more than half of what other sectors combined do. So I'm just wondering, is that the same thing in Sudan, or are there, what sector is like the most likely or attracts the most funding in Sudan?
Yeah, Yeah, you know, as I said, even the deals of startups in Sudan is very few, like less than 10. Mm. But from the very low information that's available, in general, Sudan attract most of the investment traditionally on agriculture because it represents 70% of the workforce working within agriculture. So agriculture is the big one. So definitely agri-tech business, agri-businesses could be one of the source in the future. But also fintech is also could be potentially one of the big markets because in a market of Sudan of 40 million or 42 million population, we are talking about only 8 to 9% of the population only have a bank account, right? So it's a huge market as well for banking the unbanked, if I can say. So fintech would also have a chance, I would say. Tech businesses like e-commerce, social commerce businesses have a chance. Healthcare in introducing health technological solution or in education, you know, all of these are markets. Markets are big and it's a very untapped market. So I would go with these. I would go with the agribusiness. I would go definitely with renewable energy as well. I would go with fintech, healthcare, as well as education.
Okay. All right. So considering that Sudan is an evolving ecosystem, what do you think needs to be done to position it properly and get it up to par with some of the most, well, let's say most head of ecosystems in Africa?
I genuinely personally believe, so in Sudan is like, this is what we used to call here. So Sudan is in the intersection of Middle East and North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. Okay. You know, because we are coming from a diverse culture of both worlds. We speak Arabic as a native language, so this is giving exposure to MENA region. And at the same time, we have these roots as well to the African continent. So Sudan is the right place to mix a different culture, because Sudan, like on a neighborhood type of countries, is with Egypt at the north, Ethiopia, Eritrea, South Sudan, you know, and then you have Chad, Libya, Central Africa.
Sorry.
So all these are representing a great geographical positioning. Number two, due to the inflation and the economic situation in Sudan, it's very harsh environment and very low wage and issues in payments. But at the same time, Sudan could be positioned as the next India of Africa, you know, especially for technology, remote work and doing operations outside of Sudan with the very big talents and graduates from ICT sectors, IT, computer science, development, digital content creation, and other. There's a lot of youth that could be trained and skilled to be strong entrepreneurs as well as a creative and a professional employees as well. Lastly, I think what's also needed is to position Sudan is actually the media exposure. For years, Sudan was only being featured on the media as a war zone, post-conflict areas, you know, and these due to the conflict and the issues that was happening in the country. But no one is actually shedding the light on how these businesses, how these entrepreneurs are changing lives, are creating employment and creating jobs and creating innovative stuff in the country. This image needs to be reflected in a good way, so it will at some point as well improve how investors would look into the country, how other businesses would look into that, so that they would also do business with the country and do business with this entrepreneur, and that itself going to create exposure to the Sudanese entrepreneurs as well from the country.
Okay, all right. So I have like two questions more. One is going to be about governments or the government and what it can do, but before that, I'd like to. So you're on the ground in Sudan. You have a better understanding of how the Sudanese ecosystem is. A lot of investors don't exactly have, especially if they're not from Sudan or they are foreign investors, they don't have this insight. So what would you tell an investor who wants to invest in Sudan? What is it like? Why should they invest in Sudan?
So definitely, first of all, because they don't have insights to that, we try to always, within 249 Status, we have a research team and a market insight team. We produce reports for investments. We produce investment-ready reports. We have a digital platform that investors are able to look into, see the status we have in our portfolio, see their data requests, have a meeting with them, read about the sectors, priority sectors. We do market opportunity mapping report. They get to see how big is this market, how what is the opportunities, what is the challenges. So they also get to get introduced. They can also always reach out to us at 249 to facilitate this connection and having these. In terms of how they could invest, definitely we always invite, we do our demo days offline, but also stream it online. So anyone could subscribe and join the demo day, able to see the pitching. We do translation, so it's also in English, all the documents as well in English. So they get to see that. We also provide them with the due diligence reports, you know, like the legalities, the audited files. Like we also provide these as a service, so people are able also to see. If there is an investor that would, are interested to inject finance in the, into the fund, they are, it's open to that. So we do the fund and structure it in a way that it's able to accept and as well non-Sudanese transactions, investments, ticket sizes into the fund that would invest on behalf of them. If there is an investor interested to invest by themselves, we are also able to facilitate these connections with the introductions with the entrepreneurs, able to meet them, talk with them. We can even help them into the legalities on the ground through our team, as well as providing our due diligence as well for them, so they also get to get a sense of how this entrepreneur is actually looking like. Is the data they are providing is validated? Is it accurate? Is it real? And all these aspects.
Okay, so let's move on to what the government can do. What do you think the government can do to help position Sudan as an investment destination? Because it's regardless of what private or what individuals do or private businesses do, the government still has a role and a huge one at that. So what do you think the government should be doing or can do to just help Sudan get a lot more investments and make existing businesses, like, give them sort of an advantage or help?
Yeah. You know, because I think even across the region, like, this startup movement is also relatively new, and the technology and all that. So definitely one of the first steps should be improving the legal landscape so that it would absorb these new ideas, these innovators, from the business registration, reducing the registration cost, providing better terms for tech businesses to actually launch their business out of their home without the need to go and get an office rent or any bills to prove that. Maybe some act, policy act, to have some tax exemptions and some benefits for 2 years or three. So it just give a time for these companies to stand on their feet and they could grow. In terms of attraction for foreign direct investments, I think always linking up other institutions, other countries, investors with the status movement here is also could be one of the areas. As well, I think finally providing data, if it's possible, from the government about the markets, the trading, the movement, because access to data is one of the big issues, because it's very few in a country like Sudan, and verified data is the issue. So maybe by the government producing this is going to be helpful, which will eventually also will reach to the point where even helping in changing or improving or adding to the curriculums at the universities, so that we ensure that the next generation, we are going to have more mindset or entrepreneurial oriented entrepreneurs from the college at the universities.
All right. So just before we leave, what startups do you think that anyone looking at the Sudanese scene should be watching out for? Like, give me five Sudanese startups that anyone should be looking out for.
Five is very hard because speaking about the biggest one, I think because there is a lot I think they are potentially might reach that point, but maybe if I can mention two or three from the top ones that I believe they had been there here for 2 or 3 years and now might be soon enough able to scale to near countries. I would definitely mention the ride hailing market because this is the most now top validated market in Sudan. So there is Terhal, which is right the Uber like business, and there is another company as well similar to Terhal as a business model and etc. It's called Go. It's also a tech startup working into the ride hailing business. The founder were a former Careem employees, so they have their also mindset into this. I would also definitely mention Souq.com or Kashi because with their recent round, I think they are one of the biggest player into this, even across the region. Hopefully, in years to have, I believe these are my three the three startups that I would see them at least for the time being. Going beyond Sudan.
All right, okay, that's still interesting. But thank you so much for your time, Ahmed. This has been a very interesting conversation, and it's been interesting to learn a little bit more about Sudan. And hoping that we would have a lot more Sudanese success stories in the coming months. So yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you so much for the chance. I also enjoyed this interview. I think at the end, if there is one message I would say is, I would ask anyone to get to know Sudan again from a different perspective that they used to through the other media channel. If you are into startups, tech, feel free to reach to us if you got to know about the Sudanese entrepreneur ecosystem. I think this is the message that I will send at the end.
Okay, that's interesting. Anyway, so I hope people listening and reading would do that. So yeah, that's it for today's episode. I hope you had a great time. Please leave a review, share, or subscribe to the podcast. Bye.